I'm Wayne.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Stargate Pioneer from the Starling Tribune,
a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
And welcome to the Audibly
Exquisite Podcast, episode number 80. I'm Mike Noren with
Peter Melnick.
And Peter Melnick, tell the good folks at home what we're all about.
What Audibly Exquisite is all about is we are your one-stop source for all things geek culture, be it movies, television, video games, comic books, you name it.
We're gonna cover it.
And we are on the Gunna Geek Podcast Network. Go to www.gunnageek.com and find so much geeky goodness. Also, you can find us on social media at facebook.com/audiblyexquisite. You can find us on Twitter at the AE Podcast, myself at Peter Melnick.
Mike_Noren.
You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/audiblyexquisite. You can also be able to support the show through that site through a tiered program. For as low as $2 a month or as high as $50 a month, you'd be supporting the show. And we would greatly, greatly appreciate it. Also, you can find us on Instagram at the AE Podcast. You can find us on the worldwide interwebs and catch old episodes at www.audiblyexquisite.com. You can also rate, review, subscribe, and share on iTunes. And let's see, also, you can be able to spread the word like Nutella, let your friends know about this show. And also, you can stream this fine program on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic. And the last three, they're available for all iOS and Android devices. And I believe you can also just find a random podcast app and we're on there. So, now today's episode, since it is the big 8-0, Mike, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And Happy New Year guest, Joe St. Pierre.
Joe, how you doing today?
I'm good. Happy New Year. Yay! It's 2017.
If this is your first time listening, people, Joe is a artist who has worked for companies such as Marvel, DC, Image, also, what else? Valiant.
Tell them your fun fact about Spider-Man.
My fun fact about Spider-Man. I've drawn more number one issues featuring Spider-Man or his cast than any other artist on Earth.
Very cool. Even Steve Ditko, good friend of Joe St. Pierre.
Yeah, me and Steve, we hang. Steve has only drawn one number one issue. Two number one issues featuring Spider-Man.
This is true.
I have drawn more than that.
So now, Joe, a lot has happened since we had you on last. We actually did an episode with you which has not been unearthed, but will in the very near future. Going to be cleaning that out.
You can put that for your Patreon.
That's our director's cut kind of thing.
This is true. This is true. It definitely would be a great Patreon edition.
We call it a Yak Cast special.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot has happened. A lot of movies have come out. One of them being Star Wars Rogue One. Now, we gave our thoughts on the movie. Joe, what did you think of Star Wars Rogue One, A Star Wars Story?
What were your thoughts of Star Wars Rogue One?
Yes.
I missed that episode. So thumbs up. Go see it.
I dug it. I dug the heck out of it.
Absolutely.
Have you seen it?
I have not seen it yet.
Do you know how it ends?
I can tell you. I could probably tell you how it ends without even having seen the movie. But no, not officially.
Yeah.
Did you know George Lucas is directing the sequel?
Yeah, I got that. That was clever.
Now, Rogue One actually just beat Civil War, Captain America Civil War, to become the second biggest film of 2016. That's actually a really impressive feat to be able to do.
Is that true?
Yeah. It's got a ton of money. And I mean, honestly, if you put Star Wars on the marquee, it will do gangbusters. It's going to, you know, sell out performances and whatnot. So Disney knew what they were doing when they snatched that license up.
Boy, I'll say. Wow. So wait, Civil War 2 was like the second biggest movie of the year.
And Rogue One beat it.
What the? What? In 2 weeks? Because it was only out for like 2 weeks in 2016.
Yeah.
Holy smackers.
They're already saying that it's going to be released on Blu-ray and DVD. It's like rumored right now in April.
Wow. That's impressive.
So if you want to watch it, you can be able to watch it in 4 months.
Awesome. Or I could still go to the theater, so couldn't I?
It's possible.
Okay.
I know a lot of there's like, you know, the second run theaters, they actually show it. like right as the DVD is coming out.
Is it second run now? When a movie is like 4 weeks old, does it go to second run theaters?
Oh no,
now?
that's like I think 3-4 months, give or take.
Okay.
Because I remember back in November, Suicide Squad was actually showing in this one theater near me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember when Star Wars, the very first movie, came out. I was alive, and
as was the fashion at the time.
Yes, exactly. And it played at a local theater in Latham, New York for over a year.
That's kind of like Titanic was back in 97,
98. Oh, yeah, that did that too? Oh, cool.
That was in there forever.
I think that's a good sign that your movie is popular.
Avatar was in there for a while too, but that was an awful movie.
Hmm. Okay.
Have you seen Avatar?
I've seen Avatar.
It could have been so much better.
It was a movie. I don't remember much about it. Do you ever see movies that are like huge and popular, and then after you've seen them, you forget them instantly?
Oh yeah. My latest one is X-Men Apocalypse. Out of all the movies I saw in 2016, that was one of them.
Okay. Yeah, that was a movie, all right.
It had people in it.
And that's about all you got to say about it.
Pretty much. It was
crap.
A thing.
It was atrocious.
It could have been better.
Like the other X-Men movies.
Have you seen Apocalypse?
I have. And yeah. If I paid to see it, I would have asked for my money back.
It wasn't good. It really was not good.
No, it wasn't good. But I wasn't surprised. So that's the fun thing. When you know what to expect, you're not surprised. So I wasn't surprised.
Well, now the one thing that is not really surprising is a Boba Fett film is actually going to be it's reportedly still in the works at Disney.
Finally! That should have came out before. Are you kidding me? It should have came out instead of Rogue One. We should be celebrating the second biggest movie of 2016 was Boba Fett, number one.
I agree. I mean, I think the idea of like a Boba Fett, you know, like if they're doing like an anthology movie, they should have him be like maybe like a bit player, you know what I mean? Like he could have his own like, you know, story.
Ah! No, he could carry his own movie.
Do you think if they do a Boba Fett movie, Joe, they should have the mask on or off?
I hadn't thought that far along, but I would settle for a Boba Fett movie, period.
I dig the Boba Fett portrayal in the Star Wars comics lately from Marvel. I think it's phenomenal stuff.
I think if they do a Boba Fett movie, they should just leave the mask on the entire movie, not remove it once.
Right.
They could certainly paint him like, you know, the man with no name in the Clint Eastwood westerns. You know, he's kind of like an enigma character. But I wouldn't mind going the opposite way and, you know.
Well, did you see Dredd, the most recent Judge Dredd movie a couple of years ago?
Is that with Keith Urban?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
I think I liked how he didn't take the mask off once in the entire movie.
Well, that seemed appropriate, and I could totally go there. And I enjoyed the movie, and I thought he was well cast.
I know they've been wanting to do a sequel for a while. Like, it's, you know, up in the air. Like, it may happen, it may not happen. Like, it didn't do well financially, but critically, it did amazingly.
It was a cool movie.
Yeah. And it seemed like a reasonably budgeted movie, too. I mean, a lot of it took place in, like, one building, right? So, I mean, there's room. My point was you could make money on a reasonably budgeted Judge Dredd movie, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I would have liked to have seen, you know, they're even saying, like, maybe a Netflix series could happen down the line.
Oh, that would be cool.
Oh, yeah.
But could they have the budget for that?
Well,
Marvel can do it.
Well, Marvel, their TV
Marvel
shows are just street-based.
Marvel doesn't need to do it. Marvel has thousands of their own characters.
Yeah, but with the Marvel Netflix series, like really, you know, it's just street-level heroes. They really don't need, you know, big budget, you know, special effects. Just like, you know, the closest thing to a special effect is a guy getting punched and blood comes out of his lip.
That's the start. But, you know, now that we've proven that Marvel television shows can be successful, I'm sure they can throw some money at some of the bigger end stuff, you know.
Our last guest we had, the wrestler Action Ortiz, he is a big fan of the show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Joe, have you watched that show at all?
I have watched it occasionally, yes.
Where does it rank for you? You can't, you know, get me to watch that if you beat me with a bag of soap, you know. I can't even watch it.
I want to like it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Like, I mean, the TV Marvel stuff is okay, but the Netflix Marvel stuff is, you know, gangbusters. It's amazing stuff. I've used that twice today in this episode.
Yes.
But
you have.
That's going to be like the Pee Wee Herman word of the day.
Evidently.
We're all going to scream.
Ding, 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 ding. And a bird comes down from the ceiling.
With a little note on it. Like, what's his name? Groucho Marx.
Yes, exactly.
That's the word of the day.
But yeah, what's his name? With the CW shows, you said like they did an amazing job with those.
I thought, I think Supergirl is really good. I enjoyed the crossover.
Invasion?
During the Yatcast, we discussed the crossover, if I remember right.
The mysterious which... Yatcast.
Now, yes, what did you think of that,
the crossover event? Oh, I thought it was a great idea. And I thought they did it well enough that, say, for someone like me that doesn't watch the show religiously,
right.
I understood who the characters were and, their basic role. And I enjoyed it. I thought Supergirl is a great character and somebody, something that lighthearted and positive is actually very rare on TV nowadays. And I think the Supergirl character really kind of stood out for me.
Yeah, I mean, like they really know what they're doing with their television series. Like they put so much extra emphasis and effort into what they do. It's phenomenal.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was kind of reliving my days as a comic book reader. I'm still a comic book reader, but you read like any issue of Justice League that's got Superman in it, and Superman kind of get the vibe that this problem could have been solved with Superman alone.
Yeah,
and the rest of the cast is kind of just a little extra spice, but not necessary to the story. And I kind of got that vibe with the CW crossover too. I was like, if you just let Supergirl, do her thing, she could have solved the problem in every one of these episodes.
Pretty much.
So I was getting that, the character who is way, who outclasses everyone in the cast, which it was a common thing. Like when you read Justice League comics with Superman in them, or Avengers with Thor in them, just Thor would just basically clean up any problem.
Right.
On his own, single-handedly. So that's why they would write Thor out of the series a lot, because, you have to really come up with some serious big guns to kind of challenge someone like Thor or Superman. So I kind of got that vibe in the CW crossover. It's like, here's Supergirl. If Supergirl just understood what she needed to do for each episode, Flash and Arrow and Black Canary, they can all go out for Cokes and just let her take care of business.
Yeah, absolutely. With what's it called? I wonder though, with, Marvel, could they, do that with their own, television series? Could that, happen down
the
line?
Could they do a crossover?
Well, not Marvel DC, but like, their own, style of crossover on the, the network television, not, Netflix.
You mean like the Defenders, right? Isn't that what the Defenders?
Okay, yeah, but that's Netflix.
Yeah, like the Defenders meet Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of thing?
Yeah, like something like that down the line.
It would be weird.
I think it could work, though. It could definitely work,
I'd rather see them go to Netflix personally, though.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than the other way around.
But I would love...
You'd rather see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. go to Netflix?
So they're, meet up with the guys at Netflix. Because if, the Netflix shows are known for being so gritty and violent that if they went to, like, a basic cable channel, it'd be kind of dumbed down,
Right.
Yeah.
Unless it's just Matt Murdock as a, lawyer on there.
I'm just wondering, though, what they could do in terms of, like, throwing other characters onto the network television shows. Not, like, the Netflix characters, but their own, like, exclusive to network TV, Because, like, we have Speedball on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We have not many characters, but they have characters.
Well, they're all same universe, right? The show on Fox or whatever it's on.
Which show?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
That's on ABC.
Okay. But anyway, it's all the same universe, though.
Yes and no. Like, they've said, like, they don't care about continuity now anymore with the network TV shows.
Oh, my God.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's
oh, you can tell.
It's thrown to the side, and like some people aren't in entirely 100% if the Netflix stuff is connected. Because yes, they bring up things like "quote unquote" the event or the incident, but in Avengers, but like they don't really bring up anything anymore.
Oh, don't they? Okay. Well, what do you think is going on there? You think it's intentional, or it's just they can't squeeze it into a decently written story?
I think it's just they don't care enough to maintain everything. Whereas you look at Disney with the Star Wars end with Lucasfilm, like they have the whole continuity and everything. Like everything has to match up. Like they have the story groups. Like I'm currently reading the novel Star Wars Lost Stars, and it links into Force Awakens. It links into you know, the whole trilogy as a whole, which, by the way, if you are into Star Wars novels, I highly, highly, highly recommend checking out Lost Stars.
Lost Stars.
It's,
what's the premise, please?
It's a young adult novel. It's, like, essentially, it's young adult because of the fact it's romance between, you know, a guy and a girl, and they get into the Imperial Academy, and one defects to the Rebellion.
Oh, cool.
And I dig it because, like, you see all these events that happen through the eyes of, you know, other people in the universe, as opposed to, like, you know, the key group. It's like when you see the Death Star explode, you don't really consider that there were people on there. You then realize there were just people doing their job that died on the Death Star.
Yeah, but they were the equivalent of Star Nazis, so you wanted them to die.
Yeah, but in Lost Stars, like, they personify them where they're just like, they're people who just want to make the galaxy a better place, you know, for the good of it all. But, you know,
okay,
it's weird.
I don't think Star Wars is a place with that kind of gray area. It never struck me that Star Wars would deal with things in that gray of a morality. So that's interesting, because it seemed to me clear who was the good guy and who was the bad guy.
They do an amazing job in the story with how they pull that off.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, like, I'm up to the part where the Death Star exploded. And, like, it's so just... Yeah. It's just so, like... It's very, like, wait, did that just happen? Like, there's, like, a whole page where they're like, we lost communication with the Death Star. What's going on?
Huh.
And then they realize, oh, my God, the Death Star blew up. Huh. It's really good. I highly recommend it.
It is called the Death Star, folks.
Yes.
So, it's not the best.
The funniest thing is, like, when the Death Star, you know, blows up Alderaan, you actually also see, like, random people, like, you know, in there. One of the main character's best friends is somebody who lived on Alderaan, and they're about to have a panic attack, and they're not sure, do I, you know, if I faint, they'll consider this protest and say, you know, I'm on their side.
God, that's interesting. Very interesting.
It's, like I said, highly, highly, highly recommended. Again? Lost Stars.
Lost Stars?
It's really, really good.
It's a novel?
Yeah, it's a young adult novel about, like, I think 600 pages or something. Really good. Really, really good. And I didn't expect to find myself enjoying it as much as I have. So,
And who's the writer? Give him props.
I don't know her name offhand. Let me pull it up. But hold on. I'm on the internet right now. Because I know Claudia Gray. According to Wikipedia, Claudia Gray.
Okay.
It's actually 551 pages. The digital copy, though, is, like, less because it doesn't have the illustrations.
And you're reading that digitally?
Yeah.
Cool.
So I know there's a lot of the Star Wars comics as well. They're really impressive. Like, again, you wouldn't expect them to be as good as they are, you know? Like, my personal favorite one has been the Lando Calrissian miniseries, and also the main Darth Vader title.
How cool is that? Very cool.
And no spoilers, but man, that final few minutes of Darth Vader are still, like, the most craziest thing you'll ever see in a film.
In Rogue Warrior? Rogue Warrior.
You never know. It could be down the line. That might be the director's cut.
There's a book called Rogue Warrior.
They're actually saying with Rogue One that there's multiple cuts of it, too, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, wow.
There's one version that exists out there that is completely different. And that's probably, you know, the pre-reshoots version.
Cool.
Which I think, you know.
Very cool.
Disney is a company that will not, you know, release director's cuts. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we would love to see that, it'll never happen because it conflicts with canon. And, like, they're, I think, afraid, like, somebody will watch it and go, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. It conflicts with the story. Oh, we better, you know, keep that safe.
Right, right.
Which is, you know, it's still, the fact that there's so much content out there with Star Wars that's considered no longer canon kind of sucks.
Did we have the Han Solo is alive discussion?
I don't think so. Oh,
I think he's alive too, Joe. I'm with you.
We don't see the body, so.
Yeah.
We don't see the body, and The Force Awakens was so, let's say they revisited many iconic scenes from the original trilogy.
Right.
That there was a scene where, you know, the classic encounter between Vader and Luke, you know, where Luke got his hand cut off and Luke falls down this giant well. And gets sucked out of into like some kind of air shaft and and kind of sucked out of the belly of the Cloud City, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so why couldn't that have happened to Han Solo? You've established, just in the pure visual, you've established that Kylo Ren's lightsaber is aberrant. And he could have cauterized the wound instantly, pulling it in, pulling it out. And why couldn't Han Solo fall into a well and get sucked out into an air shaft somewhere?
And it didn't go through his heart. It kind of went through his, like, right shoulder area.
Yeah. So here's the deal, right? I pitched this at my – I teach a class on Mondays to my – to their between 8 and 13-year-old kids, right? And I'm like, you know, Han Solo is alive. And they all just – got really upset. They were like yelling at me. They were like, "Oh no, he's dead. He's dead." And I'm like, why does he have to be dead? And the answer they gave me was because Han Solo said, or because Harrison Ford claimed that he would never ever play Han Solo again.
Never say never, the Justin Bieber story.
Yeah. And I was like, wait, that's got to be the first time I've ever heard, you know, the plot to a story is driven by an actor's choice in mainstream pop culture. And then I said, and then your story is even, well, what do you think of that idea first?
I dig it. It definitely makes sense.
He's alive, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So then when you use that Harrison Ford as part of the story logic, that's not even consistent either, because you're telling me that Harrison Ford would never take a $20 million payday to show up for one day's worth of work on the last Star Wars movie.
I think he's alive. I want to believe, you know? So I literally just motioned to a I Want to Believe poster in our recording room right now.
Thank you. So my case is made. And in how many years before the last one comes out?
This year.
A little under a year, yeah. December. Okay.
So there you go. In a year's time, we'll prove this out.
And, like, my thing is this. Like, you know, I always go with the whole we don't see the body, you know.
Right.
Logic. And, like, I've actually had arguments with my best friend about, you know, Gotham with the character Fish Mooney. Have you watched Gotham at all?
I have a little bit, yeah. And I did see Fish Mooney kind of fell off a cliff, right?
Yeah, and, like, everyone was like, oh, he goes, no, she's dead. She's dead. How, Josh? How? Did you see the body? Did you see the body? And he's like, no, but she's dead. That's stupid if you bring her back. Next season, she comes back with an eye patch.
She comes back. There you go.
Wow, see? 346 days until Star Wars Episode 8.
Are you using the Star Wars app?
Yep. 12 hours, 50 minutes, and 8 seconds.
Wait a minute. There are three movies, aren't there? Isn't the last series a trilogy?
I know it's gonna be episodes 7, 8, and 9, and then there's gonna be the Han Solo anthology movie or Solo movie, literally. And okay. What else? There was Rogue One. There's nothing else announced at the moment. They'll probably announce something.
Rumored Obi-Wan possibly.
That's the one where every single time I go on Facebook and see, like, a Star Wars announcement for the Han Solo movie, they should just do the Obi-Wan movie.
Obi-Wan movies, three of them.
Yeah.
I want to see a Greedo movie, too. Can we make that happen?
I want a Gonk Droid movie.
A who?
Gonk Droid. Gonk.
I want a I Don't Like You Either guy movie.
Well, Mike, he may or may not have been in a recent movie.
Yeah.
Although, you know what movie I want? I want the little mouse droid movie from the Death Star, the Down-Air-Ninner.
I've seen that one.
I would watch that. I'm surprised Pixar hasn't gone on board with, like, a animated short with Star Wars.
Like, make a droids movie?
Yeah, like anything. Like droids, you know, maybe like a little side story.
Never know.
How about a Jawas movie? No, it's a sitcom, and there's an older Jawa who has heart problems, and his son does all the work.
Utini.
Utini Elizabeth.
Oh God! But yeah, like there's so many things that they could do, like easily pull off with this franchise, you know.
Oh, and the sand people, let's get into their culture and stuff like that. They're always raiding the Jawas.
Other spinoff, like an actual spinoff thing they could do, maybe is maybe revisit the droids cartoon. Like I want to see what happened.
Bounty Hunter movies. They could do like a Expendables style bounty hunter movie with all the bounty hunters.
Yeah, but when Rebels ends, I want to know.
Love it.
When Rebels ends, I want to know what happened to R2-D2 and C-3PO, like the in-between between the prequel trilogy and, you know...
I want to know where the Jar Jar and the Gungans.
No, we're good. Watch, I'm actually going through...
No, we're fine with that.
And I've noticed this with Star Wars. When the movie ends, I go home and I actually want to consume more Star Wars stuff, hence why I'm reading Lost Stars and why I'm actually watching Clone Wars at the moment.
Well, that's a good sign of you've been inspired. That's very cool. How about a Young Yoda series?
I know the most recent issue of Star Wars, they're actually doing a younger Yoda story. Like it takes place before Phantom Menace.
Oh, love it. Love it.
It's like, that's going to be the ongoing story for like the next five or so issues. And yeah, they're really, really good at this, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think like, you know, we don't know what's going to happen next after, you know, Rebels, like what could be the next animated series. Cause they're going to, just like, you know, Spider-Man, they're doing a new Spider-Man cartoon after Ultimate Spider-Man. So mm-hmm. what is going to be the next, you know, Star Wars series after Rebels wraps up? Probably in like, you know, 2 or 3 years.
I don't know. What's your guess? I have no idea.
But what, you know.
Do you have a guess?
I think the idea would be, you know, to go back to the prequel area. Or because I think this is going to happen, we're going to have, you know, by then episode 7 and 8, or I mean 8 and 9 available. We're going to see like a new Star Wars series that takes place in between, you know, before Force Awakens and after Return of the Jedi. I think it's going to be that.
Mm, okay. Cool. Could we do more of the new generation?
I think it's going to be that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bridge
like
of the Gap.
Like a Poe Dameron kind of story.
Because they're doing the Poe comic right now. I want to see, like, you know, maybe a young Kylo Ren.
There you
yes.
go.
Like, what led to him going to the dark side? But we might just see that in episodes 8 and 9. You never know, like, with flashbacks.
Right.
And I actually, I saw the most heartbreaking image on one of the Star Wars, on the Star Wars subreddit on Reddit. It was Princess Leia with young Kylo Ren, and you know, they're smiling, and you know, she's holding him, and then it's the same shot but the roles reversed. He's towering over her and she's crying, and it's like a friggin' tearjerker, man. It's so sad.
Wow,
when the scene where Han apparently dies and Leia, you can see like Leia, you know, be strucken down and she sits down, you remember that scene?
Yeah.
What do you think she's reacting to, that fact that Kylo went to the dark side or that Han possibly died,
or both?
Exactly.
Yeah, why not both?
And that was another thing I wondered, is why didn't Leia pursue the Force? She's a Jedi. She's got Jedi in her blood, right?
Maybe she did.
Maybe secret.
So let's see a young or in between movie with Leia. What's up with that? Where did she go?
Well, the one interesting thing about, you know, the whole Carrie Fisher passing was that, you know, her mother passed away the day after. You know, Debbie Reynolds. Yeah, and somebody pointed out, you know, when Leia was born in the Star Wars movies, her mother died of a broken heart. And in real life, Leia dies and her mother died essentially of a broken heart. That just ripped me apart when where were you guys when you heard about it? Like, how did you guys find out?
I was at work. I just sat down to my desk and getting ready to have lunch. And I, you know, opened my phone, you know, flipped my phone open real quick to look at, you know, whatever's going on. And I saw that Carrie Fisher died.
Yeah, and you called me and told me about
it. Yeah, when I called you.
Literally, the only thing I could respond back with was, wow. You heard me say wow like 50 times. I'm like, because I couldn't process it. Joe?
I don't honestly recall. It was probably either Facebook or, it was probably Facebook that I kind of breezed across it. I kind of half believed it, you know, that kind of thing. I don't necessarily take what I see on Facebook as law, and I think I probably looked it up online.
I know
confirm.
That's what I did first.
I know on Reddit in the movie section, like they were posting about it, and like the moderators were deleting links every single time it got posted because they're like, it's not true or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I made a comment, like somebody goes, why are they deleting these? And I said back, well, because, you know, there's these sources like, you know, Hollywood Reporter and BBC News that are clearly not reliable, you know, like just being super sarcastic about it.
Yeah. When I saw like the big name sites like, you know, Hollywood Reporter and BBC and stuff, I knew it was legit.
As much as I don't care for them, TMZ is a reputable news source now, which is weird to say. You know, if you said that 5 years ago, TMZ is now considered that kind of news source.
Well, at least for entertainment type news, possibly, you know, even the Inquirer gets it right once in a while, right?
Yeah. I mean, like with her passing, though, like it opened people's eyes to she was more than just Princess Leia. She did all these amazing roles.
Oh, yeah. She was so much more. Yeah.
She was phenomenal. Like, I go more, though, with her script doctor work. She did amazing work as a script doctor.
Do you know what she worked on? What movies she worked on?
Off the top of my head, she did Blues Brothers, the Star Wars prequel trilogy, ton of other ones, but, like, really, really well-known movies, and she had her hand in them. Like, she helped fix these things up.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, very talented. Forget about just being Princess Leia, but hugely talented person. Absolutely.
Going away from Star Wars, going to another star area, Thor.
The new movie, you know, Thor Ragnarok that's coming out, they're actually saying right now that Doctor Strange might be appearing.
Is that like a sick Darth Vader?
That's my applause.
Oh, okay. Sound like Darth Vader with cold.
Have you seen Doctor Strange?
I have not. Maybe I should have seen these movies before we discussed them.
It's a really, really interesting, you know, look to it, you know, just overall, you know. And now they're actually, like I said, you know, if you watch the movie, spoilers, Thor appears in the post-credits scene. And,
oh, yeah?
Yeah, he makes an appearance in the film. And they're actually saying right now that he is going to appear in, you know, Thor Ragnarok. I can't wait
for
that.
Awesome.
I mean, the more of the character we get, you know, the better it is, you know, for us fans. I don't know. I mean, I like the idea that he's going to be making an appearance, but they're also saying now that Natalie Portman, who is going to be appearing in, you know, she may appear one day in a Thor movie. They have
one day.
Yeah, because she hasn't ruled out the possibility. Which is, I think she only signed a 2-picture deal with Marvel Studios.
Oh, so there's some kind of issue with her wanting or being interested in appearing in another movie.
Yeah, so she's like, she'll never do another Star Wars movie. She's made that abundantly clear.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she never wants to do a Star Wars movie, you know, because she felt that it ruined her career. Meanwhile, you know, she has such,
ouch,
you know, a strong career afterwards.
Ouch.
Like, Black Swan is actually one of my favorite... Darren Aronofsky's Black Swan is, like, one of my favorite movies I've seen in, like, the past, you know, 10 years.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, you know, she could have, you know, appeared in this, but didn't, you know?
Right.
Which is, you know, a shame. But the fact that she doesn't want to do it, or, you know, Star Wars, it...
Well, she doesn't want to ruin her... She's worried, you know, about her career.
But
like,
but the thing is this, you know, look at the quality control that Disney has.
True, unlike DC. Hence, yeah. One reason, you know, speaking of DC, you know, movies, did you hear that Affleck might, you know, they're on the fence right now about the Batman movie?
Uh-oh. What happened now?
It's basically the quality of the script. He says that if the script is not good, they're not going to make the movie. And that's what this thing called revisions are for, you know? So
I never got that concept that they have, like, some of the greatest material in the world to come, you know, draw from, and they don't touch it. It's like...
Mm-hmm. Such as?
Dark Knight Returns, they loosely did Batman v Superman on it, but not to the point. Or Long Halloween, for example. If they did, like, a Long Halloween movie, have you read that one?
Mm-hmm. I have, yes.
I think Hush would work. Hush is a phenomenal story.
Court of Owls, there's hundreds.
Like, the funniest
thing... Death in the Family, Under the Red Hood.
I always go with this with Batman. Like, I'm actually not really that big of a Batman fan, and yet a big chunk of my graphic novel collection is Batman stories. Not because I'm, like, a Batman, you know, diehard, even though I do a Batman podcast, but I consider, you know, him an okay character, but I can't deny that some of the greatest comic storylines of all time in you know, the cape, you know, subgenre, or cape genre... are Batman stories. You can't deny it.
I thought Jeff Johns was part of, you know, overseeing these movies now.
He is.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought he was writing the Affleck Batman movie.
Yeah, so I mean, he has experience writing the character, you know, the Justice League storyline, Blackest Night, and also, you know, the Batman Earth One.
Mm-hmm.
And the Batman Earth One is considered one of the best, you know, interpretations of the character.
It was good.
I mean, I think, you know, they have good things going with having Jeff at the helm. Jeff knows what he's doing, and I just really, really, really hope that they can get it right.
I hope so. They need a grand slam.
Like, I always hear people criticize, you know, the Marvel movies, like Joss Whedon's Avengers movies. All it is just, you know, 2 hours and quips. Yeah, well, all, you know, a director will have an individual style, much like how Christopher Nolan has a dark and brooding Batman, and how every single character only expresses one emotion.
Negative.
Like, they can't, you know, like, look at, you know, what's her name? Maggie Gyllenhaal's character.
Mm-hmm.
What other emotions other than...
Sad.
Sad did she express in that movie?
Whiny?
Like, And the, like, it's a hot take, I guess, but like I've always said I'm not really that big of a fan of the Nolan films. I like Dark Knight, don't get me wrong.
Definitely don't watch those movies on any kind of antidepressants at the moment. It will drag you down further into a manic depression or something.
They're gorgeous looking movies to look at, especially because, you know, Nolan did those films with, you know, IMAX cameras.
Yeah, they're nice.
They're impressive to look at, but in terms of, you know, the thing I never really cared for Nolan's films was he wants it grounded in reality. Because, like, you know, he wanted to do The Penguin and then decided, no, The Penguin would not exist in real life. Yeah, because fat guys don't exist, right?
Yeah, Penguin would absolutely be a great choice, actually.
I want to see a good version of the Penguin. Well, Gotham has a good version of the Penguin.
I like his portrayal.
He's my favorite part of that show.
I want to see them slowly, you know, start making him a little fatter, though. Like, you know, maybe, you know, next
give
season.
Give him time.
Yeah. Well, not actually found that. He could probably wear a fat suit and makeup. But anyway, we're talking about Geoff Johns. Did you hear that the other day he tweeted that he's returning to comics?
Oh, cool.
He tweeted a picture of Dr. Manhattan and said, I'm back. 2017, I'm back.
Yeah, so. Oh, cool. I'm down for that. I mean, like, Rebirth.
Well, they left us hanging there. They showed all this thing about The Watchmen, then all of a sudden they kind of just left it there.
Like, because they wanted to get your... Like, it's essentially, you know, the CM Punk pipe bomb. Do I have your attention now?
That's exactly what it was. Speaking of, oh, I saw CW, but I thought it was CM.
But yeah, you know, he... You know, with Geoff Johns with this, like, he's doing an amazing job with trying to get people's attention with this. But I just feel like, you know, they could have kept it going, and they didn't, which kind of sucks.
They said, oh, here's The Watchmen, but they're not here.
But they want you waiting. They want you to, you know, pick up the titles. And, like, unfortunately, nothing's been happening.
Well, everybody wants to see Watchmen or, you know. Well, yeah, when are they going to do it? Because they're going to do a Power Rangers Justice League team up also.
But but it's not going to be canon. It's going to be its own separate thing.
Okay. Did you hear about that, Joe?
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, they're doing a crossover between them and Boom Studios.
Yeehaw.
But, I mean, like, my thing is, I think, you know, DC does a great job getting your attention for the first few months, and then, like, sales will drop on the books, you know? Like, I was reading, you know, I was reading Batman, The Flash, Constantine, what else? Harley Quinn, the main Rebirth book that came out, I got that. Detective Comics, Action Comics, Superman. I dropped all of them.
Wow.
Not just because I'm a Marvel guy, but because of the fact it was getting expensive, and the concept of bi-weekly books is not a good thing. I don't care for that at all. I'm already
doing it's taxing.
Yeah, I'm doing that bi-weekly already with Deadpool, and I don't want to be even doing that with Deadpool in the first place, but I'm a big fan of the character, and I like what Jerry Dugan's doing, so I'm fine with that, but I don't like, you know, having every other week having to pick up a book.
Can I ask a question about that?
Sure.
So how are they handling the bi-weekly book? Do they have different writers and different artists?
Same creative teams.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've got artists out there who can put out two books a month, huh?
I know, like, right now, you know, Jimmy Pamiotti and Amanda Connor, I think they're doing Harley bi-weekly, I want to say.
Okay.
Which... I could only imagine how insane for them is, you know, having to do that bi-weekly every other week, you know, having to put out, not just put out on content, but, like, it's bi-weekly and then the last week of the month is nothing. So they, you know, that's what I do like about DC. Like, they'll give, you know, like, last week of the month off. But it's like, you know, maybe reserve.
So they don't have any DC comics in the last week of a given month?
It might be like an annual or something.
Really?
Yeah, so like they normally do that, and it's kind of a cool thing to see them do. But I don't know. I mean, I'm partial, though, like I said, you know, to Marvel. It's, you know, it's kind of like brand loyalty also, but I mean, I think it's interesting that they're even doing that. You know?
So, you know, we're in the kind of generation of binging and stuff. Isn't it kind of cool to see two books or twice as many books out a month?
Sometimes,
than
yeah.
usual, or depending on the character or probably the storyline, I guess, whether you're into it or not, right?
Yeah, depending on the character. I also go with, like, financial, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
But I like the idea that, you know, now you really don't have to worry about, like, the cliffhanger, you know?
Right.
Like, oh, man, now I got to wait till next month. Because, like, the problem with a lot of, you know, if you're getting books monthly, it kind of sucks because then you got to remember what happened the month before. That's why there's a lot of, you know, trade squatters out there. Like, they wait for the paperbacks.
Absolutely. I would say I'm one.
The problem, though, is, you know, waiting for a paperback actually can kill a book.
I wrote an article about that for Bleeding Cool. Showed up on Bleeding Cool about just that subject. Yes, absolutely. I totally agree.
But I also think, you know, one of the problems is Rebirth was relaunched, I want to say. When did Rebirth start, Mike?
Summertime, right?
Yeah, summertime. Yeah,
last summer. Mm-hmm.
Those first issues, the equivalent of a first volume, aren't coming out until this spring.
Wow.
Still.
And wow.
This is one of DC's dumbest moves. I don't care for the fact that they take so long to, you know, release a paperback because of the fact, you know, there's like, you know, Joe Q Public who wants to get the book. I can't read it. Why? Because, you know, I can't pick up the book monthly because I don't know what the hell's going on. I'll wait for the paperback. When is the paperback coming out? Months from now. Oh, fantastic.
That would be my next question related to that is, are they writing the stories so you don't need issue 3, 4, 5 in order to know what's going on? Are they?
Marvel is. They're not.
There you go. That would be a problem. Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, you know, they went back to the old continuity, and in a lot of ways, they kind of made it more confusing again, because now, oh, yay, you know, there are the old plot threads, you know, because there's a lot of fanboys out there who will complain, I wish it was the pre-New 52 continuity. Okay, congratulations, you've been reading the comics for X amount of years, whereas, you know, Billy, who just, you know, went to go see a movie, wants to watch this, and he doesn't know what the hell's going on. And then you hear them say back, oh, well, you can just go on Wikipedia. Not everything is on Wikipedia.
Yeah, I don't believe you should... I mean, do you, when you watch Seinfeld on TV, do you need to know what the history of the characters are? No, that's a ludicrous assumption that you need to do some kind of research in order to get a story. No, that's it.
I want to know the character arc of George.
Yeah, that's an invitation to abandon the story.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope they're not doing that. That doesn't seem like the wisest call.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff that, you know, they're doing, like, with Marvel. Marvel will put out a paperback, like, maybe 2 weeks after it comes out. Image does the same thing.
Uh-huh. Smart.
Like, you know, when Sex Criminals by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky came out, it uh-huh. finished issue, I think, number 15 or 16, and then 2 weeks later, volume 3 of the book came out, so you could easily just collect it that way.
Right, right.
And, like, I'm starting now, it's a 3-volume series, Alex and Atta, and, you know, by Image, and mm-hmm. I'm going to be, like, that series has been long finished, but I'm going to track down, you know, now the remaining 2 paperbacks I'm missing.
Cool. So it seems to me that the collector mentality is probably shifting over to the trades.
I would think so as well, yeah.
Well, when I got back mm-hmm. into comics in 2007, 2008, mm-hmm. I got all the Green Lantern trades, and there was, like, 20 of them. Mm-hmm. And when I finally finished them up, I think literally the last one was coming out right before New 52 started.
I don't like the idea of I like the concept of an omnibus, but I hate how it's like very inclusive. Like, it's super expensive. You could do like maybe like the fraction of that and make it cheaper. And, you know, like, that's why the one thing I loved more than anything was the Marvel Essential books, the black and white ones.
Right.
Because, yes, you're losing the color, but you still get the content. You know, you get, like, 20-something right. issues of content for, like, $1 right. a book.
Yeah. Well, I would say that the omnibus is the premier way to consume these kind of stories, and the essentials would be, you know, for someone who's just trying it out, it's at a reasonable price. And, yes, you don't get color, but you get a very large amount of content that you can kind of read through and enjoy at a lower price point. So I think it's a good idea to provide it in whatever way, whatever format that people feel like paying for it. I think that's a great idea. But my main problem is that, you know, for years now, I mean, it's almost a generation, really, that the monthly comic book form is not being respected. In other words, you need to be able to pick up a comic book and understand who the characters are and what is going on and have a point being satisfied, a story point being satisfied in each one of those single issues. And that idea has been ignored for, you know, probably 20 years now.
I mean, myself, and, like, I'm a big X-Men fan, and, like, it's next to impossible to get into the books as, like, a casual reader. Like, you know,
right.
I always hear, like, oh, you could start with Grant Morrison's new X-Men, or you can start with Joss Whedon's mm-hmm. Astonishing. guess what? Right. They still bring up heavy continuity stuff from the past.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? Yeah. The history of Kitty with Peter Colossus and the Joss Whedon stuff. If you weren't there for that, you know, you were in trouble.
And I hear people say, oh, well, they do a good job, you know, covering it with the background stuff. I'm like, no, they don't, because you need to know all these inside jokes now. All these inside jokes are inside references.
Absolutely.
And that's why, like, I said, screw it. And I just started reading. Like, I partially wish I did the Silver Age stuff, but sometimes, like, the Silver Age stuff is so hard to read. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what's it called?
Why is it hard to read?
Exposition heavy, you know, heavy. Like, I know it's a comic and you're supposed to read it, but, like, sometimes it can be so dense with the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Like, just like, you know, a whole paragraph is coming out of one word bubble.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And, like, sometimes also it's like...
Well, I've seen plenty of modern books where it's a page of one head with all these dialogue balloons. I don't know if that doesn't exist today.
Like, I know Marvel is very, like, you can read a book, you know, Marvel book, like, within, you know, 10 minutes. Like, there are ones, like, you know, Dan Slott's Amazing Spider-Man. Like, it'll take you 20 minutes to read them.
Mm-hmm.
But
tell me if you're having this trouble. The problem I've been having lately is I don't buy comics on a regular basis. It was a funny thing. Like, when I first started to crack the industry, it worked professionally. I went from a diehard collector to being a random reader. It was weird about how we're actually working on comics kind of just made it difficult for me to be a fan at the same time.
Could it also be like the whole concept of like taking work home with you?
Yeah, maybe there's a little of that too. Or, you know, you see it 24 hours a day. So I don't know what it was. The experience I'm having now as a fan is I don't really buy comics that often, but I will, like, say, go to the library and I'll have my favorite characters and I'll want to catch up and see what's going on. Right. So I'll grab a clump of Dan Slott Spider-Mans, you know, the trades, and I'll read them in a week or so and just kind of catch up and see what's going on. And I enjoy them that way. But the problem I'm having with some characters, like, now I'm reading Daredevil.
Right.
And Daredevil in trade paperback form is almost impossible to follow. I need to look up, like, a reading order for these books, because I'm in the library and I've got volume 3 with Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, and I've got volume 4 with Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, but there's a whole series in between those two volumes that I don't know about, that they re-released them and renumbered even the trades. And that's difficult.
Like, my thing is also, you know, reading Hawkeye, the Matt Fraction, David Aja one. You know, you have to read, you know, certain things, like, in between everything, and it kind of is a pain in the ass.
So you can, so as me, as a publisher, I become very aware of this kind of stuff. It's like when I was publishing, when I was releasing the single issues of New Zodiacs, I'd have like, say, issue 3 was out, and I'd be selling that at shows and signings. And even though issue 3 was essentially self-contained, I made an effort to kind of tell stories that you could just pick up an issue, a single issue, not number one, any issue, and you would get the first appearance of a character, and you would get a continuing story that was essentially self-contained. And so I made an effort to do that.
That's what I've always dug about, you know, the whole Marvel method of, you know, every person's issue might be their first.
Right. Well, that's kind of where how I came up in the industry as well, is that somebody is picking this book up for the first time and you have to kind of account for that somehow. And so the thing that I found what's funny was is that the fan base has already shifted over to the trade format. And so what I would get at conventions, I'd say this happened 9 times out of 10, which would be... I have to start this book at issue 1. And so I thank God I have issue 1 available for these people. But they didn't need, you know, even though I was trying to create an atmosphere where you could just pick up any random comic book of New Zodiacs on impulse. Ooh, I like that color. I like that cover. I like that character. That character looks cool. And I was trying to satisfy people's reading, you know, impulses, 9 out of 10 times people are already conditioned to go, I need to start with number one, otherwise I won't understand the story. And that is not how the monthly periodical form should be consumed. You know, I think that's a problem. And, you know, maybe we're just headed to a world where the monthly periodical doesn't exist anymore, and we're just getting graphic novels. And people are collecting graphic novels as series, you know, the way we would collect, you know, issue 1 through 100 of Spider-Man. Now people will collect trades. I don't know.
I mean, I had that with like the black and white Spider-Mans, like the reprints of the Essentials. Like, that's what I was doing. I was like, you know, could I have gone and, you know, collected the older issues? Sure. But I'm also realizing, man, that's going to be a lot of money to spend.
It's going to be a little problem.
Like, I'm in a group, and one of the people on Facebook for retro comics, you know, Silver Age stuff, and one of them said, oh, you're reading Dead Man. I'm like, yeah, you know, I really dug it. I'm, you know, doing the paperbacks. Oh, you should buy the books instead. Yeah, because, you know, I want to spend, you know, over $5,000 to read the entire adventure of Neil Adams' Dead Man. Like, I understand, you know, the whole appeal, but, like, I don't want to, you know, have to take out a mortgage to buy a comic, you know?
You are absolutely 100% illustrating my point. You know, when I was a kid and I saw Fantastic Four or whatever on the newsstands, I didn't think about, you know, that there were 133 issues before that. I didn't think about, ooh, I have to spend $7,000 in order to buy all of the issues before that. All I thought about was I wanted to read a story and be entertained.
Yeah.
And so when people's thought process is going towards, I need to invest a large amount of money in order to be entertained, that's a turnoff. And that shouldn't be the case. You know, when you watch TV, you don't think, ooh, I need to know the history of this actor. You just watch TV. You just turn on Law and Order or whatever, and you watch an episode, and you're entertained or you're not. And then you have the option to say, holy crap, I love Law and Order, and I've got to watch every single episode of Law and Order.
I've wanted to do that, like watch Law and Order from the beginning, but I'm realizing that is a daunting task.
I've been doing that with X-Files.
So now, there you go. Well, X-Files is another one, but Law and Order. I mean, there must be maybe 40 seasons of Law and Order in all its glory, right, and all its spinoffs and stuff. So now it becomes an investment of your time and money. If you're a fan, it shouldn't be an investment of your time and money just to get access to the story.
That's why I'm excited to watch Twin Peaks, because all I have to watch is 2 seasons and a movie. You know.
Well, yeah, but you know, are you a fan of Twin Peaks?
I'm a big David Lynch guy.
I would pay hundreds of dollars a year to see multiple seasons of Twin Peaks. I love Twin Peaks.
Well, we are getting a third season.
I love Twin Peaks. I can't wait for the new stuff. I can't wait for it.
Audibletrial.com/audibly.
Exquisite.
I'm using it right now. You can cancel it any time, by the way. I've been using it to listen to the audiobook for Heir to the Empire from Star Wars, because I'm drifting away from the canon stuff and going away and listening to the non-canon stuff, the Star Wars Legends. Mike, yourself?
Still in the Dexter stuff.
Which Dexter book? I think I saw, like, you had the on
Dexter's
your phone.
Dexter's Delicious.
Yeah, that's the one I saw.
Dexter's Delicious?
Yep.
It's him dealing with a cannibal, isn't it?
Yep.
So yeah, Joe, yourself?
I'm reading a book by Sandra Day O'Connor. It's called The Majesty of the Law, I think it's called.
Very cool.
How's that?
I dig it. So now, once again, go to www.audibletrial.com/audibly-exquisite, and you'll get a free audiobook of your choosing from thousands of books to choose from. And when you do so, you help out the show by doing that. It gives us a little bit of a kickback. And you can cancel it any time. So once again, you're helping support this here fine program. So now also, you know, a lot of other stuff has been going on. You know, they're saying that a 5th DC television series is coming to the CW.
That's my applause sound effect.
Well, this isn't counting the Black Lightning series that's coming out. That's going to be happening this year.
There's a Black Lightning series?
Mm-hmm. It was commissioned recently, I believe. I think it's a pilot, I want to say. But that's going to be happening.
Hopefully it's something like The Question or something.
I think that would be cool. That would really be cool to see. And it really wouldn't require much, you know, CGI effect, you know?
Would you like to see a Question TV series, Joe?
Sure, why not?
Wow, the fact that they've never done that is surprising.
Even Dead Man would be a cool TV series.
Dead Man would be a little bit hard, though, in terms of the CGI, because that would be a really CGI-heavy show. Maybe finally it'll happen, the Booster Gold series that was supposed to come to Sci-Fi.
Phantom Stranger would be a good one.
Ooh, there you go.
I dig that. That would be cool.
Come on now. You know, I'd love to see the Creeper in reality, but I think the Creeper is one of those characters that only looks good in comics.
That's what I've like, there are so many characters, like when you look at them, like, you know, Wolverine, big example. The yellow and blue or the yellow and brown doesn't translate well to real life.
Maybe. I'd like to see it at least.
I know I've seen like in a go ahead.
There's a deleted scene in the Wolverine where at the end of it, the lady gives Logan a case, and inside his armor, and it's Wolverine's yellow and black costume.
That's my applause.
My example of, you know, another costume that doesn't translate well is still, you know, Harley Quinn's Harlequin outfit. It doesn't...
Really?
Because like, if you watch Suicide Squad, there's a scene where, you know, she's having a hallucination, and she's with the Joker, and they recreate that famous painting that Alex Ross did, where it's Harley Quinn and the Joker, and he's wearing a tuxedo. Mm-hmm.
But you know that's an actual costume. People actually dress like
right.
That.
But I just don't. It didn't work. Like it looked so hokey to me. Like for like a believable character, like, you know, this vicious character. Like it. I didn't buy it. And yes, you know, she's a mentally unstable character. But it just didn't fit. It like I wouldn't still like even if she's like, you know, doing whatever she's doing, it wouldn't intimidate me.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of another one.
Costumes that don't translate well to reality. You have a new segment.
The original Green Arrow.
Original Green Arrow? That was Robin Hood costume.
Right.
But people actually dressed like
that. Yeah, but again, I just can't see it being a believable hero character, though. Or even the original Hawkman with that headdress.
What about Hawkeye?
But people used to dress like...
Mike actually just brought up Hawkeye, the original purple.
Hawkeye?
There's that
one.
What about Scarlet Witch's costume?
Might be correct.
I actually had a conversation with a friend who works at this heavy metal music store, and like we were talking about, you know, Marvel Comics, and he says, I like the movies, but the thing is this, when something is set in stone there, that's how it is permanently. And he brought up, you know, he's like, I love Hawkeye's purple costume. They don't do it anymore. I'm like, yeah, because it really doesn't work. But I didn't want to say that to him. But, you know,
what might look silly is Hawkeye's Goliath costume, you know, when Clint Barton became Goliath.
Another one for me.
And he wore these kind of, I don't know what you would call them, these kind of metal bands across his bare chest.
You know a costume also for me? It would have to be the Falcon's original costume. Because he looks so goofy with the thing on his face. Like, everything else is fine, but, like, the thing on his face just makes him look so goofy.
Well, Luke Cage's costume, too, with Tiara.
Oh, come on. That is the best. I love that. Sweet Christmas.
It's fun. It's fun. You can do a lot of cool stuff with comics that you can't do with live action. That's why I love comics so much.
Have you, by the way, speaking of Luke Cage, have you read the Luke Cage comic by Jendy Tartakovsky?
I have not.
It is
have you?
Highly, highly recommended. It's one issue away from being finished, so you might as well just wait for the paperback. But
okay, cool.
It is so good. I actually jumped on it for two reasons. One, it's Jendy Tartakovsky. I love, you know, his work on Samurai Jack, Dexter's Lab.
Sure.
And also the first issue had a Run the Jewels variant cover, so I had to grab that. So
sure.
I'm a big fan of the hip-hop group Run the Jewels, who just dropped their new album, Run the Jewels 3. So...
Very cool.
RTJ3, motherfucker. Anyway. So, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of really cool stuff, you know, going on. And, I mean, we're even getting, you know, like a sequel to Blade Runner now. You know, Blade Runner 2049.
Ridley Scott.
And, you know, yeah, Ridley Scott, you know, is on board with that. And he openly has gone on saying, by the way, that he will never do a comic book movie because they, quote-unquote, don't have stories. And, you know... He used as the example Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like a lot of people, like, man, this again, this is a movie. How many times? It's been over a year now, like going on to our third year this year, and we're still bringing up this movie. I never.
Well, he kind of had a point in that instance.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've brought it up, like, even nonchalantly, and now yet again we're bringing up Batman v Superman. But mm-hmm. like, there are people who will defend this movie like it, like they'll defend this movie as if their life depended on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think also they think, you know, Zack Snyder will see their Facebook message or, you know, comment on a Facebook post, and Zack mm-hmm. Snyder will personally ring them up and go, "Hi, I just want to say thank you for defending my movie. You're one of the few people that got my smart artistic vision."
Is that a quote? Is that a quote?
Clearly.
It's like when a spouse is being abused and they're finding reasons why that person beating them is okay. Be like, "Well, you know, they did give me a chicken nugget out of their order the other night. Chicken
candy. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't abuse.
Out of all the Batman movies, that certainly was one of them.
I slipped and fell down the steps. That's what Batman v Superman was. You know, fun fact, Joe. When they first released the first still ever of Ben Affleck as Batman, I was walking down my steps and I slipped and fell down them. I almost broke my arm.
It was an omen for you.
Right?
But yeah, you know, there's so much just... so much stuff about this. Like, I kind of agree with him. Like, there really wasn't much of a story to it. It was just...
wow.
Not really that much, you know, ramifications for what happened.
That falling down a step seems so much worse now that I fell down the steps excited to see that picture, and it ended up being what it was.
I'm not the biggest proponent of the movie, but I got to say there were some cool ideas in there, don't you think? I mean, the idea of a guy who comes to Earth and who's got these powers, I mean, you know, in a fear-based USA, it makes sense that this guy would be mistrusted, even though Superman is the moral center of the DC universe. It makes sense that those people, that fearful people, would be threatened by him, or people with a level of power and might feel threatened by this guy. I mean, that's one of the appeals, I guess, or motivations for Luthor, right? So it makes sense that, you know, that Superman realistically would be treated that way. You know, it's more believable to me as an adult than the way he's treated in the comics, where when he flies by, everybody loves him and, you know, and waves to him as he flies.
And throws their babies at him.
Yeah, exactly.
Save my baby.
It makes more sense to me that he would be mistrusted by fearful people than the opposite. So that makes sense, and that generates a kind of inspiration for characters like, you know, Batman, who's not familiar with Superman as a person, or you know, they're not best friends yet, they're not the world's finest team. It kind of makes sense that, oh, here's a guy who generates fear, that's what I do, I gotta find out more about this guy. Doesn't that idea make sense?
True.
And isn't that appealing? So that was in there in the movie. It seemed like there were a lot of other things going on in that movie that were kind of either shoehorned or were not executed as well as they could. Right.
Yeah.
So don't trash it too hard. That's all I'm saying is that it's not,
it gave us a chicken nugget after all.
It's a popcorn movie. Have fun with it. And then pray for the day for the Oscar winning Superman movie.
Pretty much. I mean, like, I don't know.
I wish we could bring back Christopher Reeve.
Well, I think the first Chris Reeve movie was more successful, right? You know, he was a guy, moral code. He was surrounded by people who had questionable morals. And he, despite all those things, he continued to be who he was. And, you know, I think that's a great idea. And I think it was much more successfully done, although that movie's got problems, too.
Right. Now, I mean, you know, also, since we're reflecting on, you know, Batman v Superman, also just, you know, the year in general, what would you say are, you know, some of your favorite things, you know, from 2016? Because, you know, 2016 is a very polarizing year for a lot of people, you know, with the celebrity deaths and whatnot. Personally, the most, like, the Carrie Fisher one was the saddest, but man, like, it made me realize how much we lost in terms of great content with people like Prince. And, like, you know, afterwards, after his passing, man, like, I was listening to so much Prince, like, as a result, discovering different, you know, stuff. Like, my personal favorite Prince song, by the way, check it out, is Electric Intercourse. And it was intended for Purple Rain, but they never used it. And it's like there's three different versions of it, and it's all live recordings, but it's amazing. And also, like, it's got a cool 80s creepy vibe to it.
Where can I find that?
Probably YouTube, honestly. It was never released.
Okay. I've never heard that one.
Yeah, he performed it twice in the 1980s and once on one of his most recent tours.
Well, obviously, I would listen to Prince sell snow cones in the park. I would listen to anything he did.
He was incredible.
He's terrific. Yeah. Totally.
But yeah. I mean, myself, you know, with movies, I still have to say, like, the best movie I saw this year is, like, a toss-up between Captain America: Civil War and, you know, Deadpool. Just as, like, a big fan of, you know, Deadpool, like, finally the character got done right on the big screen. And then, you know, Spider-Man with Civil War just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Mike, yourself?
Well, movie-wise, I have to go with, like, Deadpool. That was good. And I don't know. That's about it. I like Deadpool.
I mean, with TV shows.
TV shows too, right? We're talking about 2016.
Everything. I mean, Joe, how about yourself? You know, movies and stuff like that.
The thing that kind of stands out in my mind immediately when you ask about that, and I'm not even sure I saw it all this year, and I'm not even sure the shows came out this year, but it was a show called The Musketeers that was on BBC.
Right.
And I thought that show was terrific. I thought it was adventure, it was light, it was character centric. They had a lot of great characters. There was political intrigue, so you not only got a fun little episode, but at the same time, if you watched the whole season, you got a little extra about it. I thought it was constructed absolutely great, and it was one of those shows that made me so into the subject matter that I actually bought and read the original Three Musketeers book. And that's the kind of stuff I look for. I look for stories and content that inspire me, that make me excited about, you know, what I'm looking at, and make me want to go to the drawing board and do stuff like that. And for me, that show kind of stood out. Have you guys ever seen it?
I haven't, but I would definitely check that out.
Have you heard of it?
I remember you were talking to us about it at one point. I believe
a year ago, or
when we were sitting with you during Infinity Con. I remember we were
Was that this year?
Yes, that was I believe back in July or August.
I can say it was this year. Yeah, great.
There's just, like, so much stuff that the BBC puts out that is absolutely phenomenal. You know, like, Sherlock just came back.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing is that they actually revealed this week that he is a descendant of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Who is?
Sherlock? Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, in real life? He's actually... Oh, you're kidding me.
So it's kind of crazy. You know, and, like, it's perfect timing to announce it, too, since this week, you know, the series returned from a 4-year hiatus or 3-year hiatus.
Yes. Yeah, it hasn't been that long. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
They did have The Abominable Bride, though, so that if that counts for anything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it doesn't. The very first episode, which was like a mini movie of that, I thought that was one of the best movies I'd seen in years.
Yeah, I
thought it was outstanding.
They did such an amazing job with that, you know, series.
Yeah. Outstanding stuff. Direction was freaking top notch. It was great. Great stuff.
I mean, like,
more of that.
It helped blow up Benedict Cumberbatch's career, like, when you think about it.
Without a doubt.
And I still say, you know, I will repeatedly say this, you know, Marvel casting him in their films was the smartest decision they made, because he has his built-in audience who will see that movie multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Like,
one of the things I did recently on our Twitter page was I put up a poll asking people what was their favorite Marvel movie from this year and their favorite DC movie this year. Mm-hmm. And I knew what would happen. Essentially, what happened was I posted the thing, and I would include the hashtags, and I included the hashtag for for the DC ones, you know, Batman v Superman, Suicide Squad, and then the other one was like Spider-Man, Captain America, X-Men, Doctor Strange. One of the Doctor Strange Twitter pages picked it up, and it was like a it was a page devoted to Benedict Cumberbatch and Doctor Strange. They retweeted it. Now, at the end of the day, the Marvel one had way more votes for Doctor Strange than anything in the DC section. So it was
because you got Benedictines. What do they call them? Benedictines.
I know the term that some of them they like, some of them like, and some of them hate is Cumberbitches. but yeah, like there's his massive fan base, and like they're built in. Like they will always support what he does.
Count me in. I'm a Cumberbitch. I like him. I think he's great.
Joe St. Pierre, Cumberbatch.
That's your headline for today's.
I believe so.
Today's episode.
Not Kiss Buddies.
I think he's fantastic as Sherlock, and I haven't seen Doctor Strange yet, but I think it was a great call, good casting for Doctor Strange.
I thought he was good, but he did rely way too heavily on trying to do like a Hugh Laurie American accent.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. If you listen to him, you know, Hugh Laurie on House, and then listen to, you know, Benedict as Doctor Strange, you hear, like, a very, very similar, you know, voice, tonal inflection. So.
Okay.
But it worked. It worked for what they were trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Gotta see it, though. I'm a huge Doctor Strange fan. I just gotta find the time, man.
It is great on the big screen, man. Like, highly recommend checking it out that way.
Yeah. It's on the agenda. I'll get there, by God.
So now before we go, once again, Joe, how can people get a hold of you on social media?
And tell us about New Zodiacs while you're at it.
New Zodiacs, it's my own series. I created it myself. I wrote the stories and I drew it and I colored most of it all by myself. And I published it too, all by myself. And you can find that on newzodiac.com. And you can order it in a single issue form, or you can order it in graphic novel form, and you get a sketch inside the book by me if you order the trade paperback. If you go to newzodiacs.com, that's where you can buy that. And I love it. It's about 12 characters who can channel the cosmic energies of the Zodiac with an unlimited budget. That would be my Marvel Universe, and it would crush. I'm currently working on the next volume now. So we're in the writing phase, and I can't wait to get it out to you guys. It's awesome. It's fun stuff.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, Joe, once again, how can people get a hold of you on social media? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
You go to newzodiacs.com, Zodiacs with an X, and there are Facebook and Twitter links. On Twitter, I'm at Joe St. Pierre, Joe_St. Pierre. And that's all I remember. But if you go to newzodiacs.com, there are the various links.
Very cool.
Knock yourselves out. Cool.
So now myself, you can find me on Twitter at Peter Melnick, PETERMELNICK. You can find the main show itself at the AE Podcast. Mike at?
Mike_Norin.
You can find us on the worldwide interwebs at
audiblyexquisite.com.
You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/audiblyexquisite. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/audiblyexquisite. And you'll help support the show through a tiered variety of sources. Anyway, you can find us through a wide variety of options on there. Help support the show. You can help support the show from as low as $2 a month to $50 a month, and even have the ability to guest host on this here fine program.
What? Also,
you can find us on Instagram at
Audibly Exquisite.
There we go. So now, once again, for Peter Melnick, I'm Peter Melnick. Joe?
I'm so proud of you guys for not vomiting on today's episode. Well done. Yeah.
You are Joe St. Pierre.
I sure am.
I'm Yak Master Mike.
Have an audibly
exquisite week. Thank you.
Thank you.